to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're going to talk about home renovation and remodeling and some options that are available to you to actually pay for those kinds of jobs. Our guests today, Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build and Joe Marty, Joe's Vice President of Lending at Home Savings Bank. And we want to hear from you, too. What questions about renovation and remodeling projects do you have? What about financing? I hope you'll call us at 1-800-642-1234. Send us an email at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. Chad Spade, great to have you back.
Thanks, Larry. Always great to be here.
And Joe Marty, thank you for joining us as well.
Thanks for having me, Larry.
You know, we haven't talked with a financial guy in the past when Chad's been on, so it's great to have you here. And, you know, it's a kind of an exciting time in some ways for a homeowner when you're going to go to renovate or remodel. It's kind of nerve-wracking. The projects cost money. Bigger projects often mean it's money you don't necessarily have lying around. So how do you determine how much they can afford when it comes to renovation?
When it comes to renovation, there's numerous different ways to pay for it. One way, obviously, would be cash if the people have that available. Most folks end up doing some type of financing. And what a bank might look at is the value of your home and how much equity you may have in your house. Typically, home equity loans or home equity lines of credit are the most usual way that people pay for remodeling projects. We would look at their income and their debts and determine what payment would fit in with their finances comfortably on a monthly basis.
Yeah. When you're thinking about, let's say, a home and a home remodel, what percentage of person's income, generally speaking, roughly, should you not want to go over too much?
Yeah. For house payment, which is principal and interest, taxes and insurance, should be maybe somewhere around 35%
at the top,
right? Is a pretty good guideline to stick to. And total debts, so if someone may have student loans or credit card debt or automobile loans, somewhere in the 43%. And okay, at that, if you're at 43% of gross monthly income, people shouldn't have too much trouble making all their monthly payments on time.
Okay. And when you're thinking about renovating, my own experience has been that it's usually winds up costing more than you originally think it's going to cost. So budgeting for more than you think, I imagine, is something that's good.
It is. It's a really good idea because you really truly never know what you're going to get into or find until you actually start the project. And so it's always a good idea to have a little extra cushion there, if you will, if there are some unexpected expenses or you decide to upgrade something along the way.
Yeah. And you know, I'm thinking about, all right, we've got this mortgage, and practically the last thing what a lot of people want to do is go back to the bank and ask, give me some more money. And there are some options, as you were talking about. One option you didn't mention, it was credit cards.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about credit card financing on something like that?
That's
something I would do.
Yeah, I'd get a second opinion, personally. typically, the interest rate on a credit card is relatively high. It's certainly easy if you have it in your wallet and you've got a $20,000 limit and you only owe them $1,000. I mean, you've got access to some funds pretty quickly, pretty simply. But typically the interest is going to be a higher rate than what you could get with some other type of financing, as well as some types of financing possibly may offer some tax advantage to people, which is, always nice to reduce your tax burden.
And I'm thinking, some people are going to say, well, I wonder, why not just refinance the whole house and use the extra money that I might be able to get from a refinance of the whole house?
We see that, depending on the size and scope of the project and also, what your current mortgage is. I mean, if somebody has a really favorable mortgage compared with where they are today, it might not make sense to refinance the whole thing. But we certainly do refinance mortgages, pull cash out to redo remodeling and renovation products.
And if you're a first-time home buyer out there, I've gone through quite a few homes here over the course of my life. But if you're a first-time guy or gal, what concerns do you need to have when you go to talk to what concerns does that person have when they need to go to you to talk about a loan, for example?
Yeah, I think they should just have a really firm handle on their monthly budget. It's really important. You know, everyone's a little bit different with their monthly budget. Some people like to go out to dinner 5 days a week and take 6 vacations a year. Other people live much more frugally than that. And so it's important that, you know, if we say, oh, you can go to 43%, that may cut into some of your other activities or some of the funds you may have available for other lifestyle activities. So I think it's important just to be aware of, you know, what your priorities are and how you spend your money.
And what about fixer-upper houses? Chad, I might get you in on this as well. We're talking, I had a fixer-upper that wound up taking a year to fix up and cost a lot of money.
Sure. Well, that's a great question, Larry. And, you know, sometimes I actually go out or my project developer will go out and will essentially be a paid consultant for a potential home buyer who's thinking about a significant renovation, because you really do have to know what you're potentially getting into to make all of those numbers work at the front end. And so many times people are surprised at how much some renovations are going to cost. And in fact, typically remodeling might cost anywhere from, say, 30 to 60% more than that same project if it were part of the new original construction. You know, so remodeling a home is more expensive than building a home new exactly as you want it. But if you find the home that you love in the right location, and there's some things that you know you want to do to it, that still might make sense for you.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's go to Vivian in Green Bay. Vivian, hi. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hello.
Hi, Vivian.
Sorry, my dog was barking there. My son is in Madison, going to buy his first home. Found a nice little development of homes built on slabs. And I did a little research. There are as many pros as cons. We're looking at a northern state. So I don't know, is that a good idea? What should one watch for? What can a home inspector tell us about the condition of the slab? These homes were built in the 1950s, 51, 54.
And they're not in Wisconsin?
They are. They're in Madison on the east side.
Oh, east side of Madison. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great question, Vivian, because there are some neighborhoods in Madison where slab-on-grade construction was common when the developments were built. We don't see it as often in this part of the country for a variety of reasons. Of course, when the tornado sirens are going off, it's you can't go downstairs in a slab home. And then it's also true that when you have a slab on grade, whenever you have issues with the plumbing or if there are heat ducts underneath, things like that, you know, it's very costly and disruptive to gain access to those things. And because our climate is a heating climate, it's really important that that slab be part of the thermal envelope of the home. So it's unlikely that a home built in the 50s would have been insulated in a way that that slab really takes on the temperature of the home. It probably is constantly battling between the ground temperature and the conditioned temperature inside. But other than those factors, there's nothing inherently wrong with a slab. It just has some of those disadvantages. An advantage of the slab is it does have that thermal mass, and you can exploit that. And we do occasionally build additions for clients in the Madison area who want to have that thermal mass, and we're taking pains to properly insulate it so that it is going to be a big chunk of cement that is at the temperature of that room. So it's a more comfortable room from a temperature perspective year-round. The one thing that we do have to be concerned about in this part of the country, in the Madison area, in south central Wisconsin, and then in other parts, is radon. And when you have a slab on grade, we often are testing for radon down in a basement, but here we're going to be testing for radon right there in the primary first floor living area. And if there are issues with radon, that will have to be addressed. And that has to do with sealing up any cracks that are in that foundation and making sure that we're pulling air and that radon out from underneath the slab and exhausting it up above the home.
Yeah. So, and in terms of financing, Joe Marty, is there, I mean, do you guys pay attention to that, whether a house is has a basement or it's a slab home?
I think it would affect the value of the home if there's not that square footage underneath the home. But no, I mean, if it's typical for the neighborhood and something that you'd see in that market, it shouldn't be any issue at all.
Yeah, okay. So there's that good thing. And the radon part of it, too, we've talked about this on the show in the past. If there was an issue, the cost of actually fixing that typically isn't all that much. It's not many, many thousands of dollars.
Right. Typically, it's around $1,000. I mean, it varies a little bit, and some of the details will affect it, but, you know, anywhere from $800 to $2,000 probably in the extreme, but often closer to $1,000.
Yeah. So, Vivian, does that help you out?
That does. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, by the way, if you have a question either about financing or about renovation. We'd love to hear from you. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Christy on Facebook says she wants to renovate a lower-level den and turn a half bath into a full bath. Does it make more financial sense to do the bath in phases, roughing it in now and finishing it later, or is it better to bite the bullet and do it all at once?
I guess it depends on how you're going to approach the project. If you're approaching it as a do-it-yourself, or if you're going to, as the homeowner, be the contractor and going to be subbing out all the various trades and parts of it for your sanity, maybe it would make sense to phase it, and certainly if your budget only allows you to phase it, and you can avoid, if you don't want to borrow money to do the project, and you can avoid borrowing money by phasing it, then perhaps that makes sense for you. Looking at it from the perspective of hiring a professional to manage the whole project, it's probably going to make the most sense to do it at one time, because there's an economy of scale. We do all the planning and then just sequentially tackle the tasks that would be necessary to finish the job. And then you don't have to live with the chaos and you get to start enjoying it. But then, of course, you have to figure out how to pay for it.
Yeah. And on the other part, in the stages part, let me turn back to you, Joe Marty, for just a minute. Can you finance, let's say it's going to cost, I'm just going to throw out $5,000, but you're going to spend this in stages. Is there a way to secure a loan or have money available just to pull it out when you need it?
Yeah, I would recommend probably if the homeowner has some equity that they could do a home equity line of credit, and that you may set up for $20,000, and you only pay interest on that amount that you actually draw out against the $20,000. So if you needed $2,000 today, you could access that, and in 6 months you need another $3,000, you could access it at that time. And the convenience is that, you know, you do have $20,000 available to you, but you're only paying interest on that portion that you've actually drawn out against line of credit.
So that's a smart way to do it.
I think so.
Yeah, absolutely. Dave in Madison has a question. Dave, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Great, appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
Well, I have some contractors that we hired. They're very well known. They advertise on TV and radio. We decided to go that route because we've had bad experience with just independents in the past.
Yep.
So we hired them, came to an agreement and stuff like that. However, what happened was 6 months went by. They've never contacted us. They've never gotten the permits that we requested. And then when we started pressuring, they came back to us and wanted more money before they even started any of the work. So we did a little research on it, and we looked into the Better Business Bureau. And even though they're very well known and advertised quite a bit, they had an F rating with the Better Business Bureau.
Wow.
So if anybody that's out there, do your homework. You know, don't trust word of mouth. Even if they're on TV and the radio advertising, that's a lot of overhead that, you know, they have to pay for, and they're just going to pass it on to the consumer.
Chad, I'll turn to you.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear about your experience. It's certainly true that, marketing, marketing can be a good thing and a bad thing, and certainly someone can pay to create a reputation, but it's also true that social media these days, consumers have to be pretty savvy. We all have to be savvy about what we're learning on the internet, because a lot of that is paid for as well. What we've discovered, on the one hand, I, as a business owner, I had this one review on Yelp that was essentially someone that was upset that we had not scheduled an appointment with them. It was a very bizarre thing. I mean, we never did work for them. I've got this horrible review from someone I've actually never met. And so, of course, that feels unfair to me.
Sure.
Then sometimes, you can pay to have bad reviews, diminished and things like that. And that makes me, as both a consumer and a business owner, very skeptical, because some of those bigger players out there, they're doing that sort of thing potentially. And so you just have to be very savvy. I mean, I'm always a big advocate for the Better Business Bureau, and also for the National Association of the Remodeling Industry. A lot of people don't realize this, but not all industries are the same, but the remodeling industry was founded back in the 30s, and it was really about educating homeowners and upholding a high level of ethics in our industry. And to this day, and I can speak really only for the Madison chapter because I've been involved in it for 20 years, we are passionate as an association about high business ethics standards for our membership. And we, have kicked people out of the association because of valid complaints that have been filed by homeowners or by other members of the association or other vendors and business people who have essentially not been treated fairly and honestly by a member of our association. And that really for us is the, if you're not ethical and honest, you don't get to belong. That's what we protect as an association.
From a financial side on this, Joe, is any of this ever taken into account in terms of a loan itself? Probably not.
Certainly with new construction, we like to know who the builder is and their reputation and make sure that, there's not going to be any issues with, unpaid contractors over the course. That's in a new construction scenario, we control the money in the sense that we disperse out money as the project goes along. A lot of renovations, a customer, like with a home equity line of credit, they will control the money themselves. And so the bank is really kind of out of that loop as far as paying him. But we certainly do a little due diligence on the builders and make sure that, they're reputable and not going to have many problems with unpaid subcontractors.
Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build, Joe Marty, Vice President of Lending at Home Savings Bank, as we talk about home renovation and remodeling and home financing with our two guests. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer, here on the Ideas Network. Coming up after 2, Kathleen Dunn's guest looks at the rise of John F. Kennedy in the 1950s, his quest for the White House, and the playbook he left behind for future Democratic candidates. That's kind of interesting. I didn't know about that. Anyway, that's coming up at 2 with Kathleen Dunn. I'll have to give a listen. Hope you do, too. And I hope you stay with us right now, because we're talking home improvement, getting money for homes and renovation projects with our two guests, Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build, Joe Marty of Home Savings Bank. great to have both of them along. And there's open lines, so you get you on pretty quickly here. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us. The email address is ideas@WPR.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Let's go to Rich in Manitowoc next. Hi, Rich. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. Our sump pump has been going constantly for the for the duration of this weather pattern, and our house is like our backyard is on a slope downhill towards a river. I wonder if is it possible or is it conceivable to tap our the drain tile just down the hill so the water is relieved down that way.
That's a great question, Rich. And so oftentimes when, and how long have you lived in this home?
30 years.
Okay. Okay.
And
so
I just had the sump pump, the 30-year-old sump pump replaced because it just quit.
Okay. Okay. And the problems you're having now are newer problems or?
No, this, one time the electricity went off in the neighborhood, and my wife and I were bailing out that the sump pump.
Oh. Right.
And it was a heart stopper.
Sure, yeah. Sure. Well, so if it is possible from the outside of the building to allow that drain tile to be, buried and seek out, lower grade where the water can essentially, when it is collected around your foundation, will come out to an area just by gravity. And not rely on that electric sump, that is by far a better way to deal with groundwater and the surface water when we're having these sorts of extreme weather events. I don't know what the elevation of your foundation is relative to the river.
It really drops off precipitously.
So okay.
I wonder if that would affect the radon as well.
Have you had a radon test?
Not a long time ago, and I kind of swept that under the rug because I don't think it was a good thing.
No.
Well, it's good to check, and of course the radon. So first off, if there's no radon in the ground around your home, then you're in luck because it's not going to matter the state of your foundation. But we can live in homes for decades and be surrounded by radon, but because the actual foundation down underground, if that is well sealed and that radon is not getting in, then it won't matter. But once it starts to get in, then it's a problem, and you're not going to know about it unless you test for it. So I would recommend doing a radon test. I mean, this is something homeowners often don't realize. Just because you do a radon test one time doesn't mean that 10 years from now you might not find that you have radon coming into your home. So I recommend the plug-in detectors that can be purchased online, because that way you have peace of mind. And even though it's often pointed out that those are not precise scientific instruments that are going to give you exact readings, they're good enough to let you know that you either have something you need to be concerned about or you probably don't have a concern. And so I would recommend that.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, I'm looking forward to having that the drain tile extended out on the hill, down the hill, because, if I don't have to use that sump pump like it has been recently, boy, that would be a real... real plus.
Here's something that I did on one of my homes a while back. When I got a new sump, it ran all the time, and it was on a lake home. But when I put the new pump in, I raised the float.
Oh, there you go.
I raised the float an inch, and it went away. And I don't know how that affects the underside of the home, but I.
Yeah. Because the plumber, when he installed it, the water came right up to the edge of the sump well. And he said, boy, this is a good time to do that because it's going to affect your foundation and the floor.
Yeah, right. But that's what I wondered. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so probably not the best idea in the world. to raise that float, or can it be?
I think the devil's in the detail there, because you don't want the water to be constantly pushing up under the slab, but certainly it's something that you can play around with a little bit.
And, yeah. Sure, fool around with a little bit. Yeah. All right. Well, good luck to you, Rich, and thanks a lot for calling. Bill in Oregon, your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I bought a house 10 years ago. I've got a wooden retaining wall that I'm going to be spending about $15,000 to $20,000 replacing. And just want to hear your thoughts on, because right now we're thinking of probably going to finance it with a home equity loan, and just wanted to hear your thoughts on because we've been entertaining contractors, and just wanted to hear thoughts on landscaping contractors for one thing, possible financing ideas, and also whether a rock wall versus, you know, if any particular kind of retaining wall, because this is going to be running the whole back of the house almost, and you know, whether any particular type of stone adds more value or would add value as a home improvement versus just being replacing a fixture or repairing something.
Okay. Well, I don't know who to start with. Joe Marty, maybe start with you?
Sure. As far as paying for that $15,000-$20,000 repair, I mean, I think, you know, you mentioned home equity, and I think that's probably a great place to start. You know, we could take a look at your whole situation and like your current first mortgage on the property and things like that, and see how great of a deal you have on that. Maybe it's an outright cash out refinance and get a better deal on your first mortgage, pull the cash out for the retaining wall, and that would be the way to go. But I do think borrowing against your house, if you have that available equity, is probably a great idea. You'll get, you know, the most competitive rates as well as possibly some tax advantage of that.
Okay. And then for the other part of it, Chad?
Yes. Again, I would recommend NARI as a good resource. I mean, there are a number of landscape architects and landscape companies that are in the Remodeling Association. And again, that's what you're doing. You're remodeling your landscape, basically.
And so of course, the National Association of Home Remodeling Industry, is that right?
Well, or National Association of the Remodeling Industry, NARI, yes. Yeah. So, there's a Madison chapter, and there are contractors in the, you know, in your area in Oregon. And as far as materials, I mean, that's really a good question for a landscaper. I would hesitate to say. I mean, I will say that from an architectural perspective and with some of the historic renovation work we do, I mean, we're concerned about maintaining an aesthetic in the yard that's consistent with the home or other structures on the property. And so that would be something to consider that is probably going to be helpful with respect to value. But
well, it should be here for at least 30 years.
There you go.
Great.
Thanks a lot for calling, Bill. Appreciate it.
Thanks, bud.
Yeah, take care. I have a friend who's got a kind of a retaining wall in the front of his lawn that he's going to be removing, and the blocks, they're I don't know, about 6 inches, maybe 8 inches high, and they're very heavy old blocks, but they still look wonderful. He just wants a different look, and I thought the value of those should have some value. They're not cemented in. They're so heavy. They're Would there be value to something like that? Pulling those out one at a time?
It's possible. I mean, there are many. One approach, just to give an example, I have a steel structure at my commercial property that I'm trying to get rid of. And I know I've had a few people make an offer that, well, you know, they'll come and they'll remove, if I allow them to have it, then they'll take it down. And it's not an easy thing to take down. Retaining wall, a lot of labor involved in removing it.
Yeah.
He might be able to make an offer out there on some of the internet sites, you know, like Craigslist or something, and say, you know, with a picture, this material, he could try to sell it, or he could just say, you can have it if you come and remove it.
Yeah,
and that,
which would
that
be
is
a really
often,
good thing.
Yeah, and a lot of people do that. A lot of materials, building materials and landscaping materials are repurposed simply by advertising that if you want it and come and take it, then, you know, you can have it. And or some monetary compensation for it.
Yeah, well, and you look at that and you think, gosh, these are still, even though they've been in there for a long, long time, there's nothing wrong with them.
It's certainly silly to put it in a landfill when someone else can make use of it.
So. Absolutely. Yeah. Lou in Washburn, let's go to you next. Hi, Lou.
Hi, good morning. Wonderful show. I'm just curious on an old home up north here, how common is it for the hot water heater to be in the same living space as the bathroom?
Oh, you're concerned about potential problems there. Okay.
Yeah, that's a great question. So it's not that unusual in a cottage or just a small home that we'll see the hot water heater is right there where it needs to be next to the bathroom. So just from a design perspective, and particularly in a building where you have a slab on grade, and we were talking about that earlier with a caller, you know, those mechanical systems have to be up in the main home. And so the hot water heater is often close to the bathroom. And if it is a natural gas hot water heater, we always have to be concerned about the potential for a gas leak. And, of course, utilities, or whether it's propane or natural gas, there's an odor in that gas. And so we're likely to smell it, to detect it. But if your nose isn't working quite as well as you would hope, then, I mean, having that detector there that is going to... detect a gas leak is an important safety measure that really every person should have on the level of the home where there are gas appliances. You know, and if you have them on multiple levels, then I would recommend having one of those detectors nearby. There's no inherent safety problem with those appliances if they're properly maintained and installed.
Right, and this has it's a gas. It was just switched over to gas, and it does have an electric blower up top that forces those fumes before the pilot comes on. It's an ignition pilot. So, and it has about three safety measures. Mm-hmm. I was looking through the booklet.
Yes,
there are about three safety measures. So, it looks like they've done everything that they could think of to make this a properly safe appliance, but just showering next to it is kind of offsetting.
Sure.
Yeah, know what you mean, Lou. I have one terrible story involving something like that. I was at a cabin in northern Wisconsin in the wintertime, and a friend of mine and I came back to the cabin after being gone all day, and we smelled gas, and my friend left the door open to air the gas out, which then kicked the furnace in, and we had an explosion in the bathroom. That was a long, long time ago, and I'm certain that the safety devices that are in effect now are much better than they were 30 years ago.
Yes.
Yes, yes. Let's hope so. Like I said, I read about three different areas where there were safety catches, I guess within the process of this appliance. That if one failed, that the next one would catch it or, whatever. But there were three different areas that, that they offered a safety device of some kind within. So it seems pretty safe, but, just kind of offsetting.
And take Chad's advice, I think.
Yeah, well, so I was just going to add for our listeners that, that power vented water heater that you have there is really what we are pushing all of our homeowners to consider upgrading to when the old hot water heater fails. And many old hot water heaters that were gas just had a simple passive chimney vent on the top, and it relies on on hot air rising, and so the fumes, which have carbon monoxide in them, have to go out through that chimney. And in a newer home that's going to be tighter, often we see backdrafting in those chimneys, and that becomes a safety hazard So, you know, you can rest assured that you've got a very safe appliance there.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling, Lou. Appreciate it. I want to give Terry and Madison a chance to join in. Terry, hi. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Good morning. First of all, I'm an independent private contract, paying contractor, and I just private homes. I work directly with the customers. Once in a while, I get behind a remodel, and I have been behind a couple of Chad's jobs doing some interiors, but good word for him. The main call was, or about the call, was home inspectors. I've been gone behind several houses over the years, excuse me, where inspectors have gone through, and they're reputable. You see them advertised. I've been at a financing place one time where a speaker came in from one company and been behind their companies, and I've gone behind places and seen so much work that needs to be done and things they miss, from mold remediation, water damage, foundation problems. And I'm not a contractor, not a carpenter, I'm not an electrician, a general contractor, but just growing up around stuff like that. And I just see some terrible, terrible inspections go through, and they're not cheap. No. And these people get stuck with it, and they don't know what to do sometimes. But just comments on home inspecting, and I know it's all about getting a reputable company, but I've seen some big names people come through there, and I think they're lazy.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it is important to do your homework, as a previous caller had noted, just with hiring a contractor. It's hard sometimes to sift through the noise and figure out what's real and what isn't. Talking to past clients can be helpful. I think it's always important. I mean, obviously, I give out references to my potential clients, and, you know, I'd like to think that, you know, 95% of our clients are extremely happy with us. And we've certainly had a few clients over the years that for whatever reason have not been happy with us. You know, no one hands out the names of people that were really unhappy with your work. So, you know, everything that you're going to encounter about a potential inspector or contractor, you always have to be a little skeptical of that information as a consumer. But reading reviews, you know, reading the replies of the inspector or the contractor to the negative reviews, that's always very telling, I think, because, you know, there is a dialogue between people, and sometimes the mistakes happen, and sometimes they're very legitimate concerns, and how people deal with that is important. And so I think it's just taking the time to process that information and to feel some confidence that you're hiring someone who is dedicated to doing a good job and who knows what they're doing.
Yeah. From a financial side, Joe Marty, is when you're financing a home, you expect to have that home inspected?
We do. It's not required, but in the vast majority of cases for purchases, we do see a home inspection occur. Mostly what we see from the banks side of it is somebody will have a home inspection and they'll find there's an issue with, say, the roof. And so then what they'll typically do is call in a roofer to say, you know, really, what is the nature of the problem and what's it going to cost to fix it? And so you may see like a renegotiation of the contract at that point to split the cost of the repair, or the seller's going to pay the cost, or, you know, have the repair done prior to closing or something like that. But I think Chad's advice as far as doing your homework. And then I would also talk to friends and family and coworkers and other people who you can trust who have built or bought a home and had a home inspection. Mm-hmm. Because I think there is a great variation in the quality of home inspections out there, unfortunately.
Unfortunately. I think Terry's right on the money there, too. Terry, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build and Joe Marty, Vice President of Lending at Home Savings Bank, our guest today here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller. Taking a look at home improvement and financing home improvement today with our two guests, Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build, Joe Marty, Vice President of Lending at Home Savings Bank. Great to have them along. Thanks for listening. We will go right back to the phones. All our lines are filled, so let's go to Paul in Oshkosh next. Paul, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. I always enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I'm a senior citizen living on Social Security, and I got a house full of rotten windows. And I just don't know where to choose or what we need. There are so many out there. There are ads every day on the TV. What should I look for that is economically possible and at the same time give me good windows?
What's the situation now with your windows? Do they frost up in the winter, or are they leaky?
No, they don't frost up, but there's a lot of those crank up windows, and the cranks don't work. And it's just that some of them are cracked and whatever. So
okay.
Maybe it's not terrible, but
okay.
Well, this is a great question, Paul. Thanks for calling in. So windows, there are a couple of things that we talk about that are important for you to think about. I mean, one issue is the performance of the window. Like, how insulating is the window that you would be putting in? And when we talk about insulation in a wall or ceiling, we talk about R value, and the bigger the number, the better. But for windows, it's actually the inverse of that. It's called the U value. And so typically now we're looking for windows that have a U value of about 0.33, maybe 0.3. A really high performance window would be 0.25. And what that essentially means is that window has an R value of 3 to 4. But often those energy assessments are looking at the window glass, the glazing itself, and then you have to be concerned about the seals on the window and the material that surrounds the glass. So materials are the other things we generally try to give advice on. Fiberglass windows are probably, for the money, the best value, because fiberglass is an excellent material. It's going to last a long time. It can be repaired. But most importantly for a window, it's not going to move around a lot when it gets cold or hot. And, you know, you think about a window in Wisconsin, it could be 0 degrees outside and 70 degrees inside, and you've got about an inch of material there that is experiencing that extreme differential of temperature. And then it's got some wind on it, and maybe it's getting, you know, wet at the same. I mean, you know, it's crazy what a window has to withstand, basically. And this is, of course, why they ultimately will fail. So having fiberglass is excellent. A maintained wood window or a well clad, aluminum clad wood window are also good alternatives. And then vinyl. I'm not a big fan of vinyl windows. And the problem with vinyl is that while it is often the least expensive product, vinyl also moves a lot when it gets hot or cold. It shrinks up when it's cold and it expands when it's hot. And so when, you know, if you put vinyl siding on a home, for example, you install it through slots with the nail so that material can move around. I mean, by design, it has to be able to move, because it will move. And if you consider that a window is shrinking in the wintertime, what does that do to the seal between the window and the sash that surrounds it? So I would discourage you from putting in the vinyl replacement window, but probably the most cost-effective thing is going to be some sort of a sash replacement, probably fiberglass, not vinyl. And the fiberglass can go right into that opening without having to tear out all of the old trims. And that will probably give you the most bang for the buck as far as improving the seals and improving the performance and comfort, taking care of those old rotting wood parts, and giving you a nice functional window. And there are probably quite a few contractors you can find that would provide a quality product and installation.
What about the financing side of this, Joe Marty?
Yeah, I mean, we certainly do a lot of different home improvement loans. You know, he had mentioned that he's on a fixed income and retirement income, and so I would suggest maybe something that is keeps his monthly payment as low as possible. That would give him the opportunity to a longer amortization and make it affordable.
Yeah. something like that, depending on the, I don't know if Paul has got the house paid for, but there's likely, since he's been there a while, there's some equity there, maybe maybe even a refinance?
Possibly, but, you know, for the cost of a window replacement, he's probably going to, the closing cost on a total refinance mortgage may be prohibitively expensive, whereas a home equity loan may be significantly cheaper.
I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, we would just want to take a look at his situation and see what type of monthly payment he would be able to afford, and then... you know, we've got a lot of options, and being a local community bank, we make all of our decisions here locally. And so if somebody needs a little longer amortization than maybe what the bank typically offers, we can get that approved locally and get it done to help people out. I mean, our latest motto is we will make it happen. And so we try to do whatever it takes. We understand that everyone's got unique situations. And
in Paul's situation, it may be best to talk, to get some idea as to cost, but then talk to a financial person before you go ahead with it.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, you should line up how you're going to pay for it before you sign a contract, that's for sure.
Yeah, okay. There we go, Paul. Good luck to you. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Charlotte in Alberta, Minnesota. Albert Lee, Minnesota, excuse me. It's your turn. Hi, Charlotte.
Well, hello. This is Charlotte. How are you doing?
Great. Appreciate your call. What's on your mind today?
Well, I bought a house about a year and a half ago, and I knew when I moved in that's going to have quite a lot of stuff done to it. But I'd like to get like a ballpark idea for the expenses. It needs a wiring updated. It's got 60-amp service. And, I mean, the whole house needs to be rewired. It was built in 57, and it's got all the original wiring. I wanted to move the laundry room from upstairs to downstairs and pretty much make the house handicap accessible because I want to retire to this house. Can I get an idea how much the cost of this stuff would be?
Well, that's a great question. It's certainly a common question. I would say every person I meet with wants to know, you know, roughly what it'll cost to do the thing that you're doing. And I like to give the analogy, you know, what does a car cost? Mm-hmm. You know, there all of the details that ultimately you will be presented, or all the options that you'll be presented with, and the things you choose to do or that you decide not to do will decide really what your project costs. On top of the fact that every home presents certain unique opportunities and challenges that will have an impact on the cost. So pricing and giving realistic budgets for a particular home and project is often very challenging. But that said, I'll take a stab at it mm-hmm. since you asked, with the caveat that that every house is unique. So, you know, we've worked with a number of homeowners over the years to rewire a home. Now, obviously, the size of the home would be a big factor in that. But a house that was wired in the 50s, you know, it probably has a BX cable in it or some sort of compliant grounded cable that will not need to be torn out of the home. It's simply that some things will need to be updated. The fuse box, the main panel, will probably get upgraded to a 100-amp panel, which is often more than adequate for the typical residential home. And then
can they put in a circuit breaker when they do that?
Yes. Yes, they would put in circuit
That'd
breakers.
Be automatic.
Correct. Yes, that's
okay.
And so... And then you will probably have to work with the utility, or the electrician will work with the utility to upgrade your service to 100-amp service. And, you know, that whole process of putting in the new box and making some upgrades, you know, you're going to probably spend anywhere between $3,000 and $10,000. And the $10,000 is assuming the house isn't too large and that really there aren't going to be, you know, you're not going to rewire the home. We've had some older homes that, you know, $20,000 gets spent rewiring the home, and you can spend more than that depending on what surfaces have to get disturbed. But, you know, probably $3,000 to $5,000 might be spent in your situation based on what I know. You know, moving a laundry, you know, that's something that you that might end up being done for $3,000. And again, you know, you might spend 10 to 20 depending on what exactly has to happen. You know, will a new space be finished for that? Will a room get altered?
Right.
You know, those.
The laundry room would back up to the bathroom, so there is plumbing there already.
Yeah.
I don't know, does that help?
You know, I mean, really, that often is not going to necessarily impact the cost. What will impact the cost is the access from underneath to that space. You know, if it's an unfinished basement, you know, because the connections are not likely to be made in the wall to, say, the sink plumbing or the shower plumbing. You know, there will be an independent drain and independent water lines that are brought up from the floor for that new laundry. And so if the space where you're contemplating putting this in is accessible and other plumbing is exposed down there and it's not finished, that will make it a less expensive process.
There we go.
Is that helpful?
Oh yeah, very.
I mean, I will just say that, you know, finding a contractor that you trust to help you understand what is possible and explore the options. You know, with our company, we're a design build firm, so people hire us to help them consider these options and explore cost.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Chad Spate of Chad's Design Build and Joe Marty of Home Savings Bank, our guests. We'll take a quick look at the news and then we'll be back. You stay with us. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network, talking remodeling today and financing those remodels and renovations for your home. Great guests for you today, Chad Spate of Chad's Design Build, Joe Marty, Joe's Vice President of Lending at Home Savings Bank. I'm Larry Mueller. And you can join in. I think there's one open line left for you at 1-800-642-1234. Maybe you've got a remodeling or a financing question. Certainly love to hear from you. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page, which is titled The Larry Mueller Show. And let's turn to Kate in Waukesha next. Hi, Kate. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm so glad I tuned in today. I have a ranch condo that we built. Now I realize it's just coming up on 3 years. And the one problem we keep having is excessive water building up on our windows in the winter. It's to the point where it's causing mold. It freezes the windows shut. What should we do about that, or what can be done about that kind of problem?
Well, Kate, that's a great question. It's a common problem. So let's talk a little bit about some of the things that might be going on in your home. Does the condo have a basement?
Yes, it does.
Okay. And does the furnace have a humidifier on it?
No, it does not.
Okay, that's good. Do you have pets or a lot of plants?
We have a couple of pets and a few plants.
Okay.
The plants are relatively new additions, so it's not excessive. But
okay.
There are some plants in the house, yes.
Okay. Well, so the first things that we look at, you know, other than making sure we're not dumping water into the heated air in the winter, which is what a lot of old homes have, that humidifier. So you don't have that. But a lot of newer homes like your condo, which I think you said was 3 years old,
yeah.
So, you know, that house is going to be very tightly built and probably fairly well insulated. And so all the moisture that's being created by pets and plants and people and cooking, all of that moisture needs to be dealt with systems in the home. And because it's not a leaky old home that dry air is coming into, that's what used to happen, which is why we would humidify an old leaky house. Now we have this really moist, cozy home. And so we look to ventilation systems to try to deal with the problem first. So if the fan in the bathroom is a high-efficiency fan, it can be operated continuously.
Okay.
And that is one way to deal with this problem. A more sophisticated system would be to install what's called a heat recovery ventilator or an energy recovery ventilator. And these systems essentially exhaust the moist air and bring in the dry air, but they put them through a heat exchanger so that you're not just dumping the heated air out and bringing in the cold winter air. You know, you're recapturing some heat, but dumping out the moisture. And then you're also just getting fresh air in the home when you do that. Typically,
we had actually thought about that and did a little research, but we kept getting sort of conflicting information that may not solve the problem. So we were real reluctant to make the investment in that.
Right.
Have it not solve the problem, but you're saying that would probably be a really good idea?
Well, it's a possibility. I mean, it is one of the ways that we address this issue. I mean, another thing that you might consider would be a high-efficiency whole house dehumidification system, and that's also going to bring in some fresh air, but it's going to essentially be a dehumidifier for the home, and that would be professionally installed in conjunction with your heating system.
Okay.
But then that might really address the humidity, and but I would start with a good fan in the bathroom. That might solve the problem, and then also make sure that the fan over the stove is working properly, because depending on how much cooking you do, you know, that is a major source of moisture.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's not vented to the outside. When we were building, they wouldn't allow us to do that. But I know it's one of those. I was not happy with that. But the bathroom fans are both obviously vented out, so we'll just make sure.
Okay.
That we can at least start with that. But thank you very much for your help. I appreciate it.
You bet. Yeah. Good luck.
Thanks a lot for calling. Maddie and DePere, it's your turn. Hi, Maddie.
Hi. I was wondering about siding, especially on light-colored houses like white. And seems like there's a lot of problem with, like, a sort of a green mold grows on the siding, and every so often it has to be washed off. And you can even run into problems with, if you bring in a professional. One time there was a professional that used something that kind of etched the windows. But also, if you can't do it yourself, that can be kind of costly. So if you have shade covering yours, that's going to be covering your siding, should you pick a different kind of siding?
Well, those are good questions. I mean, certainly whenever you have a shaded lot and if you have a lot of moisture on that lot or you have conditions that are contributing to that moisture and things aren't drying out, I mean, it's not uncommon to see moss and some of these other issues. And, I mean, we had a client that we had built a deck for 11 years ago, and he was concerned about some moss that was growing on the deck, and we did a thorough power washing of the deck, and it was a newer product, a synthetic material. I believe it might have been a Trex material, and it looks like it's brand new now, but there was literally some moss growing in some areas where it would have been hard to clean, and because there was organic matter that had accumulated in the ridges of the material, it was doing no damage to the material, but the moss was feeding off of the organic matter that was down in the grooves. So, you know, and this happens on siding as well. You know, there's often a wood grain, even on like a vinyl siding, there's a wood grain on there, and you can get some just, you know, dirt and dust and organic material on there, and then that will become, you know, food for other things to grow, and it can be unsightly, but once cleaned, I mean, really, it's just a matter of cleaning things.
And are there not paints that if, let's say, you want to paint the house, so you clean the, do a good job of cleaning the house off the outside and then paint it, are there materials within the paints themselves that can help mitigate some of that problem?
That's a great question, Larry. I mean, there are definitely some additives in some of the exterior paints which claim to help reduce these problems. And all I'll say is I'm not really sure that they make a big difference.
Okay.
Because I think the maintenance side of things is important as well. But then you also have to be careful when you clean a house. If you have, say, wood siding, you want to make sure that whatever is used to clean the home is not going to react to the nails, for example. There are all sorts of things that can unintended consequences from maintaining a home.
Yeah, very interesting. Thank you so much thanks for calling. I appreciate it very much. Let's go to Lauren in Chicago, Illinois next. Lauren, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm wondering if you guys know anything about grants that are available to first-time homeowners. It's more of a purchasing a home question and how that works, and in terms of are they really available and the competitive nature of those grants. A friend of ours was telling us about this, and we're in the process of moving to another state, and I hear it maybe varies county to county and even state to state. So.
Yeah. Joe Marty?
Yes. There certainly are some grant programs available for first-time homebuyers. In the state of Wisconsin, there is a state agency called WEDA, Wisconsin Housing and Economic Development Authority, and they have a grant program specifically for the state of Wisconsin. There's more national programs like the Federal Home Loan Bank out of Chicago, which if your bank is a member of that, which we are, we can get up to $6,000 grants for people. And those have things like income limits and some other restrictions on them. So it's not just like a bucket of money people can pick up and walk away with. But we certainly have a lot of different options to give people grants and help them get into a house.
Lauren, are you moving? Where are you moving? What state?
We're moving to Tennessee. We're moving to Nashville.
Oh.
Yeah, I would recommend you speak with a local bank in the Nashville area and ask what type, because I would be surprised if the state of Tennessee doesn't have a program very similar to our WEDA program. And like I said, that Federal Home Loan Bank of Chicago, there's Federal Home Loan Banks all over the country, and most banks are members of the Federal Home Loan Bank, and they also have programs for first-time homebuyers.
There we go.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Good luck with your move.
Thank you.
Nashville sounds like a kind of a fun place to go to move to, I think, anyway.
I was there in March. It was very fun.
Okay.
Just saying.
Just saying. Oh, man. Cheryl in Madison, your turn. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. We have a very old farmhouse. The original stone house was built before the Civil War, and the addition was built in the 30s. In the upper level of that addition, the knee walls are 3 feet high, meaning, and so the ceilings are very low. So we're looking at options because we would like to remodel that upstairs area to make it more livable, including adding a bathroom. Is it possible to change the pitch of the roof line rather than dealing with trying to add or change anything about the knee walls, so that we would change the pitch of the roof line and then add dormer windows to add to that living area?
Oh. Okay, so when you refer to the knee walls, does the roof line essentially, or does that knee wall correspond with the wall below that's the exterior wall?
Yes.
Okay, so I think based on that, that to be able to have more headroom up there, you will probably be looking at rebuilding the roof itself, and raising the ridge of that roof. Do you know about how high it is to the middle of the roof now?
Oh, let's see. So, let's see if this makes sense. So, if you're standing in that room, in the space, you could touch the ceiling. And the roof line does not, the pitch of that roof line does not marry up with the original stone roof. So, it's about 2 feet shorter.
Okay. And this is the addition as opposed to the stone original home.
Yeah. The stone original home would have the regular size pitch. But that addition, for some reason, was built 2 feet shorter.
Okay. Yeah, well, so, you know, there are many things to consider when you're trying to reclaim an attic space and finish it. I mean, we consider these options with many homeowners. So, you know, rebuilding an entire roof is not a a simple undertaking. However, it's often more cost effective to rebuild the entire roof than to just add a few dormers onto an old roof that doesn't have the structural components that it would need to allow us to add the dormers. So, you know, as far as getting the most bang for the buck, you know, and if there isn't enough room under that roof line right now, I mean, you are referring to a ceiling in there. So is there a flat ceiling that is below the ridge?
Yeah, it is. So the underneath the eaves, so they did have living area. So there was essentially two bedrooms up there. There are two bedrooms up there. And then underneath the eaves, they're like the crawl spaces are where you can see the actual roof construction. So we would take that whole roof off, change the pitch, add dormers. So all of that would be new construction. And then we would ideally marry up the two roof lines so that they would be angled correctly.
Yeah.
It sounds like an exciting project.
and certainly something that can be done.
Yes.
Okay.
Typically,
good. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, because we are looking at the different options. We've already pulled new electric up there. We've pulled new plumbing up there. So everything's ready. We just have to decide if how much of that is a takedown at an entire upstairs area or to redo the pitch and add dormers.
So you are in the Madison area, and though no matter where you are, I mean, you're going to need a plan and you're going to need permits. And so the only thing you do have to be concerned about is if the house where it sits right now is closer to property lines than where it would be allowed to be rebuilt if you were rebuilding, like that roof might not be able to be altered if the current addition is in violation of zoning setbacks. So that's that's a really important thing to look into. And you might be able to apply for a variance to gain permission to do it, but that can be a roadblock at the start of the project.
Maybe why it was built that way in the first place.
Oh, interesting.
That's
we've been told to contact an architect, so we'd have someone do a drawing.
Yes, you'll definitely need a plan for that.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Good luck.
Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your calling. And you never know, you know, a neighbor may complain, for example, about an additional height. I had a situation where somebody was going out at a particular height, and because the neighbor had a sunroom, he had to lower the roof line a few feet to take into account so that the neighbor's sunroom had sun for the plants. And so there was, he wasn't able to have the roof line the same for the new addition.
Right.
So you kind of never know.
When you need a variance, it's very important to have your neighbors on your side.
And it's also, I think, important to have someone who really knows what they're doing and someone who has the respect of the city itself.
Right. Correct.
But probably no matter what city you're in.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
We have, I'm wondering, one of the things I wanted to touch on was the value of projects and remodeling projects. If you're considering selling a home, let's say, or if you're just renovating and want to know, you know, down there 10 years from now, is this going to make any difference in my value? If I spend $20,000, am I going to get $15,000 back in return, or am I going to get $25,000 back for that $20,000 investment?
That's a great question. I mean, every project is unique, but right now, according to the what the National Realtors Association annual report, the cost versus value report, we're finding that the typical project returns about 70% immediately on investment. So that's, you know, like kitchen and bathroom remodels and additions, things like that. In the Madison area, the statistics do vary quite a bit, but most of them are between a 60 and 80% payback. So again, on average, about a 70% payback. The one thing that the data always shows is that the more frugal the improvement, the higher the payback. So a really high-end kitchen or bathroom renovation is not going to give you as high a return as a modest renovation. And I think part of that is that you know, the high-end renovations are quite expensive.
Yeah.
And you probably had a kitchen before you did the kitchen renovation. So, you know, it's not like you haven't added any square footage to the home, and you've put in some really beautiful cabinets and countertops, but they're just not going to add that value. But, of course, quality of life is the reason that most people renovate a home. So the question is different if you're flipping it versus if you're going to enjoy it for 10 to 20 years, because then you're doing it for yourself anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. And Joe Marty, what about the whole financing situation, right? Well, what's the market like? It varies a lot, I'm sure. Madison, I think, is probably a pretty robust market. You might see that across the state.
Yeah, I think the whole state of Wisconsin is doing really well as far as home sales go. Dane County is, some realtors will say, is on fire. And what they mean is that if a house is reasonably priced, it will get multiple offers in a very short amount of time. It's a very competitive market in the sense that buyers find it difficult to get a house under contract. And we have numerous people who are pre-approved for a mortgage, and they just kind of get frustrated because they've lost out on five or six or seven.
Yeah.
And so looking at houses continually and really not seeing the payoff of, you know, having a house under contract that will soon become their home can be discouraging for people. And it's a fun time to be in the market. And it can also be frustrating for some buyers. Great time to be a seller. I mean, certainly sellers are having much better success than they've had in previous years. So.
And what about the situation for remodeling and financing remodeling? Is there any difference there? I mean,
not really. I mean, if it's a really large project, say somebody is adding a second story to their ranch home or something like that, that may cost $150,000, $200,000 remodel, then typically what we would do is get the plans and the specs from like Chad or whoever their remodeler is, and give those to the appraiser up front and say, when this remodel is completed, how much will this house be worth? And then we would base our loan, loan-to-value ratios off of that improved property. Mm-hmm. So it's a little different process, but I think that remodeling has been very popular, especially when people look out in the market and see what's out there and what things are costing these days and the competitive nature of getting a contract on a house.
And sometimes you just want to stay in that neighborhood. I like my neighborhood, and I'd rather, if I had to, I'd rather remodel and spend a little money and stay right where I am than move someplace.
Yep.
Well, this has been a lot of fun, and I really appreciate you guys taking the time to be with us today. It's a lot of fun to have a chance to talk with you, and I hope we have a chance to do it again. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Larry.
Yeah, thank you. It's always great.
Chad Spade owns Chad's Design Build, and Joe Marty, Vice President of Lending at Home Savings Bank, our two guests. And we have, I'm sorry we didn't get to everybody, but that's always the way it kind of works. And I think we have links to their websites on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. So if you want to take a closer look at Home Savings or Chad's Design Build, just go to our Facebook page or just type in those words and you're probably going to get them. Oh boy, it's always amazing to me how quickly the week flies by, and it's already Friday coming up. I'll be away from the show tomorrow, but Jill Nadeau will be on for Garden Talk. They'll be talking about growing organic vegetables and how to preserve them. So that's tomorrow for Garden Talk. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Please stay with us.